It's the Kix Morning Crew, Sean and Dave joining us on the phone. He's part of the IndyCar Radio Network broadcast team. He'll have the call in turn one for the Indianapolis 500. He's a former colleague of mine from my time in Lafayette, and he's the only Carolina Panthers fan in the state of Indiana that I'm aware of. He's Nick Yeoman. Nick, good morning.
Yes, it is a distinction that I am proud of. Maybe not so much these days because they're not very good, but it is good to be with you guys today.
So before we talk about the events of this month, obviously, let's look back at last season for IndyCar and the scramble that, well, all matters of sports went through. IndyCar obviously had to adjust on the fly last year's 500 run in August, extra races on the road course at Indianapolis. So how important was that flexibility to making sure IndyCar could make it through last year and then build on it for this year?
Oh, I think not enough can be said about just how flexible they had to be to stay afloat. And I think the biggest thing that I know some people have brought up, but maybe not enough has been made of it, is the fact that Roger Penske bought the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the IndyCar Series just months before the world got flipped upside down and everyone had to change just about everything about daily life. So, yeah, it was certainly a struggle. You know, you got to tip your cap to a lot of the racetracks that we have on the IndyCar calendar of being flexible, knowing that, hey, that we're going to have to reschedule some races and there may be a situation where you're not going to be able to make as much money because you can't allow fans. So it was a weird year. There's no doubt about it. We're starting to get back to normal, obviously, with 40% capacity for the Indy 500. We're not all the way there yet, but there certainly looks like there's light at the end of the tunnel. But it was a bizarre year, and the steps that everyone had to take to kind of get through it and make some adjustments, I think, were very admirable.
You know, Nick, now speaking of that attendance and the capacity, last year's race was kind of unique for several reasons. It was run in August instead of May with no fans. Now, this year's race is looking like it could be the largest attended sporting event since the start of the pandemic at about 135,000 fans. Now, talk about what having fans back at the Speedway means to the event, the drivers, and even the broadcasters.
Oh, it means everything. I mean, it's crazy that in a sport like motorsports, where you've got these loud engines, you wouldn't think you'd be able to hear the crowd or that they would factor in as much as, say, a football game or a basketball game or a big shot or a touchdown scored. But there are certain guys in IndyCar, like a Tony Kanaan or an Elio Castroneves or an Ed Carpenter, a local guy, who, when they make a pass, despite the engine noise, you can hear the crowd. And the drivers have said you can hear the crowd. And if you've ever been to the Indianapolis 500, I mean, the build-up to the singing of Back Home Again in Indiana and the command to start engines, there's just a buzz. And nothing about last year's race that took place in August felt right. I almost felt somewhat guilty being there in turn one because from my perch, I could see the main gate by the roundabout at the corner of 16th and Georgetown. They were fans lined up just to watch it on a video board outside of the racetrack. So it was uncomfortable. It wasn't nearly as much fun because the fans, as you kind of alluded to, they bring energy to that place. They give that racetrack life. And again, not completely back to normal, but I can guarantee you that the 135,000, 140,000 that are going to be there are going to make some noise and make that place feel a heck of a lot more normal. And what a lot of Hoosiers and folks in the Midwest that love the Indy 500 so much, they're going to provide that atmosphere that we're all really used to.
Now let's talk about the season so far on track. It's been quite the youth movement, first-time winners, but the veterans that, and some of the ones that you've mentioned, they're not exactly getting pushed out of the way either. Plus, you've had drivers come from NASCAR and Formula One. What does this season say about the feeder system for IndyCar and also the appeal of IndyCar to drivers worldwide?
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. A lot of just really intriguing storylines. I mean, you mentioned some of the drivers that have come over from other series. A lot of big names from the Formula One world. Romain Grosjean comes over after surviving a near-death experience in an accident, and he runs really well a week ago on the road course at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Another guy in Scott McLaughlin is a guy who competed in Australia in the V8 Supercar Series and won some championships over there. And then probably the most notable name to an American audience is Jimmy Johnson, and coming over to run in the IndyCar Series after retiring from NASCAR. So I think it says that IndyCar is still very appealing, that there's drivers all over the world from different types of racing that want to compete in IndyCar. But you mentioned the youth movement. It's been fascinating. We've had four of the five winners this year are drivers under the age of 25, and we still have the status quo. Guys like Scott Dixon and Joseph Newgarden, who's not old by any means, are still the guys to beat in terms of the championship, but to have these young drivers like Pato O'Ward, a young Mexican driver, Colton Herta, a young American driver from California, these guys already getting to victory lane, I think like you see in other sports, when you have those younger drivers come up, that's how you start building the fan base, and that's how you transition to the next generation.
So talking about this movement, some folks might be coming to IndyCar with fresh eyes and ears. Maybe last year kind of let people press the reset button, maybe expand their sports interest. More casual fans might just be turning to Indy. What are some of the things they may need to know when they listen to the broadcast so they can better understand the sport itself?
Yeah, that's actually a great question because it is motorsports are unlike anything. I'll tell you this, one of the things that I don't think folks understand is just how much of a team sport this is. If you watch on television or you listen on radio, you're going to hear us talk a lot about the one driver controlling his one car. But throughout the course of the Indianapolis 500, it's a 500-mile race. Can't go 500 miles on one set of tires and one tank of fuel. So all these guys come to pit lane, and there is a ton of pressure put on the pit crews for these teams that can really make or break the races for these drivers. And these are guys that are mechanics, they're engineers, a lot of them locally based. Some of them come from all across the world with their engineering expertise, but the amount of pressure put on those guys on pit lane, there's been numerous times in the history of the Indianapolis 500 where I've watched a guy lead a race, come to pit lane, they bobble on a pit stop, and then all of a sudden they're running 15th or 20th, and their chance is thrown out the window. So this is much more of a team sport than I think a lot of people realize. There's spotters around the racetrack, which are an extra set of eyes for these drivers. When you're going 220, 230 miles per hour, inches matter because there can be disastrous consequences if you misjudge something. So there's an extra set of eyes on a radio headset to talk to these drivers. So I think that's the biggest thing that a lot of folks don't realize when they come and they get involved or they get interested in motorsports, just how many people it takes to provide the opportunity for one guy or one woman to cross the start-finish line as a race winner.
We're speaking with Nick Yeoman of the IndyCar Radio Network. He'll be on the call turn one for the Indy 500. Nick, which drivers in practice so far have surprised you the most? And since you had a pretty good prediction on your Twitter feed, at NYeoman, if you want to follow him, it's a good follow for the Indy GP winner. I mean, it wasn't exactly a prediction, but it was kind of a prediction. Who's someone to keep an eye on for qualifying and for the race itself?
Yeah, I mean, so far in the week of practice, there are some usual names that aren't surprising at all. Scott Dixon has been remarkably fast. He's one win away from tying the legendary Mario Andretti for second all time in IndyCar wins behind A.J. Foyt. I mean, that is the type of legacy that he is building. He led 111 laps in last year's race. Maybe, probably, kind of, sort of, should have won that event until Takuma Sato came strong at the end of the event and ultimately came away with the victory. Sato's been very strong in practice as well. Will Power is a former winner, driving for Team Penske. He's been very strong. But some guys that I think are looking for that first win that I've been awful impressed with, I wouldn't rule out the Ed Carpenter Racing Trio. Rinus VK is the driver that you talked about that just won on the road course. And then the two other drivers, kind of with that local angle, a couple native Hoosiers. Ed Carpenter is a Butler graduate from Indianapolis that owns the team. And then fan favorite Connor Daly has actually been really, really strong as well in practice. And I know there's a lot of folks around here that would like to see those two Indiana boys be strong. And based on what I've seen in practice, I think they've got cars good enough to compete for a race win.
Before we let you go, and not to look past May, but Kix 96 is a country station. We see Nashville on the schedule on the streets of Music City coming up in August. Not only is Nick a Carolina Panthers fan, but like my brother, he's a Nashville Predators fan. How big is this race in Nashville for IndyCar? And are you going to have time to stop at the Bridgestone Arena team store to stock up on your Preds gear? Because I may need you to get a few things for my brother.
That can certainly be done, yeah. No, this is setting up to be just a massive, massive event. There's some huge names that have got involved as well, like Dale Earnhardt Jr., Justin Timberlake is involved. I mean, there's going to be concerts. Alan Jackson is supposed to perform a concert after the race, so it is a big deal down there in Nashville. And I love the motorsports scene down there in the Music City. It's really come on strong here in the last 5 to 10 years with NASCAR trying to get their race at the Fairgrounds track going, and then, of course, IndyCar hosting. It's a street course race. They kind of race around the Tennessee Titans Stadium. They go across the bridge, downtown Nashville, and then come back. So it's going to be a party atmosphere. Absolutely cannot wait. I love country music and love the atmosphere down there in Nashville. And yeah, I probably will sneak over there and buy some Preds gear that I don't necessarily need, but I'm going to buy because I'm down there. You're absolutely absolutely right.
You're still a pretty young guy, but you're a veteran of the IndyCar Radio Network. How does that feel?
It's still crazy to me, honestly. I mean, I'm 33, and this will be my 12th 500 broadcast.
That's crazy.
It's hard to believe, but we've got a great crew. Not a ton of turnover with our crew, because this is one of those gigs, man. Once you get it, it's just a lot of fun covering this race, and not a lot of guys want to leave, but it's pretty bizarre that this will be number 12. Can't wait to be in turn number one, and looking forward to another running of the greatest Spectacle in racing.
And you and the whole crew do a great job. We look forward to hearing from you right here on Kix 96, the call of the Indy 500. Nick Yeoman of the IndyCar Radio Network, thank you so much.
Anytime, guys. Thank you.